From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You're great. Thank you for being here. Everybody, make yourself a Cosmo, because actress Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City will be joining us later to play Not My Bride. Very exciting. But first, exciting news. The honors just keep pouring in here at Wait, Wait. Our website has been nominated for a Webby Award. This is true, which is the Academy Award of the Internet, making us, I guess, potentially the Mira Sorvino of the Internet, but be that as it may, it's a big honor. With a three-day gala celebration in New York City later this year with special celebrity hosts, I kid you not, Ask a Ninja, and that unknown actress who pretended to be somebody called Lonely Girl 15. Needless to say, we want to go. However, it would be beneath our dignity and possibly a violation of NPR ethics to ask you to go to the website, webbyawards.com, and vote for us as a nominee in the humor category.
Wink, wink.
In the meantime, call us up and answer some questions about the week's news. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jen Shepherd in Norwich, Vermont.
Hey, how are things in Norwich?
Muddy.
Yeah, it's that season.
Yeah, it's mud season indeed.
And it lasts until it just freezes over and you can walk on it, I know. Jen, let me introduce you to our panel today. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Roxanne. Hi.
Next, say hello to a humorist, author, and the man to blame for everything you might find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Jen.
Hi, Tom.
And lastly, say hello to a comedian who will be in New York at the Blender Theater at Gramercy on Saturday, May 17th, Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Jen, welcome to our show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
We got monks tomorrow, Desmond Tutu and Richard Gere here today, and a nude torch relay in the works. I'll tell you one thing, it won't be boring.
That was an official in San Francisco telling the New York Times earlier this week about the variety of fun and games the city expected as it hosted what?
The Olympic torch touring San Francisco.
Exactly right, the Olympic torch relay. Isn't it a shame that the noble tradition of the Olympic torch relay begun by the Nazis in 1936 has become so degraded? The Chinese organizers of the International Olympic Torch Relay have called the event the, quote, journey of harmony, which is a little like calling a race riot a celebration of difference. After raucous protests in Europe, in which activists wielding fire extinguishers actually forced the torch to take a bus, people were nervous about what would happen next. Fortunately, the only American stop was in San Francisco, a city known for having a sedate, politically neutral populace. At the last minute, city officials actually scrapped the planned route and instead sent the torch to random locations around the city to avoid the hordes of protesters incensed by everything from the oppression of Tibet to the overuse of MSG. In the end, officials pronounced the public display of Olympic spirit and international unity a smashing success because they had prevented anyone from seeing it.
I love that people went. First of all, I'm not sure I would go out to see the torch, but I don't do a lot of cultural stuff. But I just love it that people went to see the torch and the torch didn't come. And what did they see? Was it 1,000 people or something standing around waiting for the torch? But they did get to see, apparently there were also nudists. I think it was really safer for them that the torch didn't go by. A lot of potential burn victims there.
Very good, Jen. Here is your next quote.
We're there because we're there.
That was Representative Gary Ackerman, Democrat of New York, summarizing the much-awaited testimony this week on Capitol Hill as delivered by whom?
I don't know.
You don't know? No, this of course, was the important testimony about this sort of thing that's going on you might have heard of. Basically, the Iraq War.
Who is testifying?
You do.
General Petraeus.
Yes, you do. General Petraeus. All you needed to do. You may remember that 7 months ago, General Petraeus told us that things in Iraq were bad, so we had to stay. Now they're getting better, so we have to stay. Because if we leave now, we'll miss the really cool part where the Sunni and Shia militias get together for a chorus of I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. The general says it won't happen soon, though. I quote him, "The champagne bottle has been pushed to the back of the refrigerator," unquote. By the way, that bottle, it's been sitting in there for 40 years and still says in the label, "Congrats, President Johnson, on your victory in Vietnam." It does seem that we get to leave in Iraq when it's time to leave. And they kept asking, well, when will that time be? And when it's time.
When the conditions say it's time to leave, we will leave.
And when will the conditions be that it's time to leave? And they say, well, when it's time to leave, the conditions will be such that it is time to leave. It's as if the entire nation is a child. He is our father, and we want a pony.
Yeah. Right.
And when will we get it?
Right.
When it's time to get you a pony. Right. When you're ready.
Well, it's like when your children finally wear you down, where you're reduced to just saying, well, because.
Yes.
That sums up the testimony this week.
Well, when you show me you can handle a pony, that's it.
Can you clean up after the pony?
Yeah. That's where so many hamsters get their start.
You know, that's what we should have done.
Yeah,
we should have given the president a hamster.
No,
and if he could have taken care of that correctly, we should have let him invade Iraq.
Really, we should have invaded Monaco or...
You know, oh, yeah, better. Jen, for your last quote, we had a hard time deciding which one to use, but we kind of had to go with the best.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
That was probably the most famous line said by an iconic actor who died this week. Who?
Charles Heston.
Charlton Heston, indeed. Yes. Very good.
When did Moses say that?
It's amazing. He had quite a career. For about a decade in the 50s, an epic just wasn't an epic unless it sported the square jaw of Charlton Heston, who was Ben-Hur and Moses.
Let my people go!
And then in the 1960s and 70s, he easily segued into earthier material. He was the astronaut and time traveler captured by apes in Planet of the Apes, and the future cop who makes a shocking discovery.
Soylent Green is people!
And then later in life, he became an author and a political activist, most significantly with the National Rifle Association.
From my cold, dead hands.
Now, people have been thinking about taking him up on that last one this week, but I think we should refrain out of respect and also because he might just be testing us. We don't know. Carl, how did Jen do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Jen was perfect. 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on her home answering machine.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
We want to remind everybody to join us here most weeks at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our Webby-nominated website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, the Mortgage Bankers Association in Washington, D.C. is having a hard time these days doing what?
Paying their mortgage?
Exactly right. Finally, some good news to come out of the housing market crisis. Or if it's not good news, at least satisfyingly sad news. A lobbying group for mortgage bankers is having trouble paying its own mortgage after losing income and members last year. Due to chaos in the market and soaring interest rates, the Mortgage Association is now finding it hard to refinance and secure tenants for its new building in Washington. So to avoid foreclosure, the association has moved back in with its parents.
So who holds the mortgage on the Mortgage Bankers Association?
Probably the same company I went with, which is right. Don't Ask, Don't Tell Mortgage Company. I'm so ahead of the curve, I got to tell you. I lost my house years before it was a thing to do.
Tom, archaeologists digging in caves in Oregon have found evidence that they believe proves humans arrived in this continent much earlier than previously thought. What is this important archaeological evidence?
The Coleman lanterns.
The Coleman lanterns.
Earlier than that, even.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I have a hint?
No, no. It's something that it wasn't just the call of nature. It was their place in history, it turns out.
Really? Like ancient poop?
That's right, yes. Scientists digging in the Paisley Caves of Oregon discovered fossilized human waste from 14,000 years ago. These kinds of deposits are known in scientific terms by the Latin phrase numerus duos. Not true. They're called coprolites, and they support a theory that humans crossed from Asia more than 1,000 years before the rise of the Clovis culture. That's the earliest known culture here in the Americas. When asked to comment on the discovery, Senator McCain said he enjoyed his time hiking in Oregon and hopes to return someday soon.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jonathan Mine from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Boston?
Oh, they're not too bad. It's actually pretty warm today.
Oh, yes. And the Red Sox are playing again, which is exciting.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, did you see that thing where they had Bill Buckner throw out the first pitch?
Yes, I did. I snuck away from work for a little bit and got a chance to watch that.
Did it reduce you to tears as well, or am I just weird?
Well, I'm not originally from Massachusetts. I'm from Kansas, so, right. You know, it is what it is.
Have you forgiven him, Peter?
I have forgiven him from the depth of my heart.
Okay.
Who's Bill Buckner?
Well, we only really have about 45 minutes left. I don't know if I have time to really fill you in on this in the story, but he's a tragic figure of my youth, but I've come to peace with him. Jonathan, it is nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jonathan's topic? Carl is not going for yet another ride in the kiddie coaster, no. He's talking about the revolutionary Nintendo video game system, the Wii, the one where you actually have to get up and move, wave your arms around using its motion-sensitive controller. This week we read about a new game that will use the Wii's capabilities in a whole new way. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about new games created just for the Wii, but only one of them is true. Pick that real game, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
All right, sounds good.
All right, ready? First up, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
If dragging your baggy hide off the couch to play tennis or box with a virtual opponent is a little heavy on the joystick for you, relax. Grab another tub of ranch dip because hope is on the way. Major League Eating, the game, will be released as a WiiWare launch title on May 12th. From pie-eating contests at the county fair to the chilled shrimp at a wedding reception, Americans are no strangers to competitive eating. Food-based gaming was inevitable, so dig in. Chow down against a computer-generated glutton or take on your fellow couch potatoes online, all without leaving your own couch. Sharp graphics measure remaining stomach capacities, and matches are complete when somebody projectile vomits. Power-belching burp-offs are just one of the many challenges you'll enjoy on the way to witnessing your rival's full-throated howl of defeat.
Major League Eating coming soon for the Wii. Your next story of that console's latest offering comes from Roxanne Roberts.
In an effort to attract the growing female market, next month Wii releases Love Hunt, an interactive dating game. The game is set in Matchtown, USA, where singles search for a mate in bars, discos, churches, and grocery stores. Players use the controller to wave, wink, drink, and run it up and down the body during slow dances. Hit it off. You use your arms to hug, pinch a bottom, or even make out. Turned off, players cross their arms, push away, or even sharply sweep the controller to slap the offender. Players get points for being approachable but not too easy, and win by collecting or being asked for the most phone numbers. Quote, it's like our interactive baseball or tennis games, but the winning score is love, love, Nintendo said in a press release.
Love Hunt. Which you can date in the privacy of your own living room. And lastly, let's hear a story of the latest frontier on the Wii from Paula Poundstone.
Nintendo Wii's newest game, I'm the Politician's Spouse, puts an end to the notion that electronic games are shallow, mindless entertainment. The player clips motion-sensitive wires to their cheeks and dons wired gloves to signal an animated spouse poised behind a speechifying politician. The savvy player must intuit when to nod, applaud, step forward and wave to accept a touching but unexpected wind beneath my wings type tribute. Points are lost for looking dazed or inattentive or openly flirting with an attendee. The key to the game is split-second timing and both subtle and dramatic facial expressions following the politician's text. The spouse must emote, support, concern, forgiveness, and a general sense that if the politician dies, they can take over.
All right, let's review your choices. Let's put it this way. The video game experience provides you a chance to be virtually somebody or something else. So, you will be able to be from Tom Baudet, a competitive eater, from Roxanne Roberts, a person out there in the singles market, from Paula Poundstone, the spouse of a prominent politician. Which of these will be the virtual experience available to you on your Wii?
Well, I'm not really sure, but I think I'm going to have to go with the first one.
You're going to go Tom's story about competitive eating?
Yeah.
All right, that's your choice. Well, what we decided to do was we decided to get a reaction to the prospect of this game from somebody who does this for real.
I'm Crazy Legs Conti, the 11th ranked competitive eater in the world. When anyone can use a Nintendo Wii remote to eat 20 dozen Acme New Orleans oysters in 8 minutes, that means 12-year-olds can become virtual gustatory gladiators, while in reality, I just get the upset stomach.
That, of course, as you heard, was Crazy Legs Conti.
All right.
The 11th ranked competitive eater in the world. We tried to reach the first 10, but their mouths were full. Congratulations, Jonathan, you got it right, because indeed the new Wii game will allow you to be a competitive eater. Well done.
All right.
You earned a point for Tom. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Excellent.
It is. Thank you so much for playing with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we invite famous and glamorous people on to answer questions about the obscure and mundane. It's called Not My Job. Back during the long and successful run of the HBO show Sex and the City, viewers tuned in each week knowing that Carrie, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, would suffer all kinds of angst and doubt about her latest entanglement with a man, and that Samantha, played by our guest Kim Cattrall, would not.
Kim
is
got
now,
that right.
Yeah, she is now starring in a Masterpiece Theater presentation on PBS this month. She'll be returning as Samantha in a film version of Sex and the City soon. Thank God we'll be able to see her without all that censorship they did on TV.
Yes.
Kim Cattrall, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
You tell me.
I will tell you. We're so glad to have you. So you've had such a long career on screen and on stage, but we want to talk to you, of course, about your iconic role. I refer, of course, to Emmy in Mannequin. Mannequin fans? That's a joke, but we were actually talking about that movie that you did with Andrew McCarthy back when. How did you, the mannequin, come to life exactly? We couldn't remember the mechanism.
I don't think I recall it either.
We've all blacked it out. Okay.
I think I was sort of a spirit throughout the ages to come to inspire men to do great things.
Well, that's why we invited you to be on the show, so hopefully it'll work.
Was it with a necklace?
A necklace.
There was a necklace involved?
I think in one of my escapades, yes.
Yes. Well, that's exciting. But I know what people really want to hear about, and that is, of course, Samantha Jones in the HBO series Sex and the City. We could describe Samantha, but why don't you? What was she like for those who don't know the show?
Oh, well, you would have to describe her as a free spirit.
Yes.
Very adventurous. She's sort of an homage in some ways to Auntie Mame. You know, most people, especially sexually, in Samantha's view, are sort of picking at the appetizers, but she's on the main course and eyeing dessert.
I have to tell you that you mentioned Auntie Mame, and I just had this image of Lucille Ball doing some of those things that you did, and I just had to blanch.
Well, I'm a huge fan of hers, and I was so happy when I got to do some kind of crazy physical comedy, which I love to do, which is, you know, it sometimes looks easy, but in 4-inch heels,
no,
it's not a blonics. It's just you try it.
Now, what's interesting to me is that a lot of times when a character, particularly in television over a long run, gets really associated with a character, sometimes they want to back away from that character in their life. We think, of course, of Leonard Nimoy writing a book, I Am Not Spock. But you, toward the end of your run as Samantha, wrote a book called Satisfaction, The Art of the Female Orgasm. So I'm guessing that you, in fact, didn't want to get too far away from Samantha.
Oh, no, that was my first book. My second book was called Sexual Intelligence.
Oh, I see.
So I went further into the research, as you say.
My point, however, I think still stands. So
But my third book was called Being a Girl, and that was for young women, the ups and downs of navigating teenage life. My atonement.
Yes, I see. You had to make up for it. Now,
I think when your fourth book, Practically a Nun, comes out, it's going to...
Oh, I don't think I'm going to live that long.
Well, I mean, talking about shifting your image, you're in a new Masterpiece Theater. It's not called Masterpiece Theater anymore. It's just called Masterpiece, but it's a film from British TV. Could you tell us about that? It's coming up soon, I know.
Well, this is the first time I've actually played a character that walked the earth. I mean, most of the characters that I played are from someone's imagination. And it was the wife of Rudyard Kipling. Her name was Carrie Kipling. I had no idea when I read the script initially that Rudyard Kipling was married to an American. And one of their sons died in the First World War. And this is a story, really, of that young man who's played by Daniel Radcliffe from Harry Potter fame.
I'm sorry, who?
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Exactly. Someone sent me an article recently that says, Harry meets Samantha, which I thought was
Well, I mean, that has to be... I mean, here's Daniel Radcliffe, who is, by some measures, the most famous young man in the world, having played Harry Potter in, like, his 5 movies so far.
Yeah.
And is he concerned... He does a great job in this movie, which I enjoyed very much, of not being Harry Potter, instead being a very convincing portrayal of this other character. Has this something that's concerning him now? Is he like eager to break away from Harry Potter to show the world he has other skills?
Well, I think he is. I think most actors want to be known for, you know, being a little more versatile than just one character, one role their whole life. And I think that he realizes that, you know, as we all do now, that Harry Potter, I think he's got 1.5 more movies or 2 more movies to do, and then it's over.
Yeah.
And he wants to continue to be an actor, so he's investing in trying different roles with different directors, and I think he's really enjoying it.
Well, then do you think using the wand in the Rudyard Kipling movie was a good idea?
Yes, when he's on the Western Front of World War I and he just starts shooting
magic. I'm hopeless because I'm sitting here thinking, would Samantha sleep with Harry Potter? And I was like, yeah.
Well, he did recently turn 18, you
so
know.
So there you go.
It was so funny because when I met him, someone said, "Well, do you know Kim's body of work?" I said, "I don't think he has any idea."
I have to say, there is a scene in the movie in which your character gets into bed with Rudyard Kipling, and helplessly, I was like, "Well, here we go." And
ouch!
And it was like, no, but nothing. It's like 1910. They didn't have sex then, I think. So that nothing then happened. It really does have to be. And your performance is excellent, and I think eye-opening for people who only know you from Sex and the City. But certainly, it is without question the most boring underwear you have ever been depicted on film wearing. It's terrible, shapeless.
Very high necklines too.
Oh my God!
It's terrible.
Well, Kim Cattrall, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have invited you here, though, to play a game that this week we're calling...
What America Needs Now is a Drink.
That is what Franklin Roosevelt said. at the repeal of Prohibition exactly 75 years ago this year. It was on April 7th of 1933 when real beer was first allowed to flow again in our land. So in honor of the day that Americans were first able to get a snootful, yes? We'll ask you three questions about the temperance movement and Prohibition, taken from a website maintained by sociologist David Hansen. Get two questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is actress Kim Cattrall playing for?
Kim is playing for Susie Riding of Golden, Colorado.
Here's your first question. One of the problems facing the Prohibitionists as they created their movement to ban alcohol was that Jesus himself is depicted in the Bible as drinking wine. You know, if he can do it, why not the rest of us? So, what was the Prohibitionists' response to this problem? Was it A, to insist that Jesus was really enjoying a refreshing cup of grape juice? B, to say that anybody could freely drink alcohol as much as they liked as long as they were themselves the living Son of God? Or C, to insist that immediately after drinking that wine, Jesus spat it out?
Tick-tock, tick-tock. I think A sounds pretty good.
A is correct. That's what they said. They said it was really grape juice. The Prohibitionists actually commissioned versions of the Bible with all references to alcohol removed. And as for the passage in 1 Timothy in which the apostle recommends a little wine for an upset stomach, they said that he had meant it should be applied topically.
Oh, dear.
Next question. It wasn't enough for the Prohibitionists to point out the costs of drunkenness and illness caused by alcohol. Sometimes they just made stuff up. Early temperance activists maintained that alcohol consumption could cause what? A, the growth of additional arms and legs. B, the sprouting of hair on the face, palms, and bottoms of the feet, on men and women. Or C, spontaneous combustion of the drinker.
Hairy palms kind of appeals to me.
I thought it might.
Sounds like an agent.
It does. Yeah. Should we try B?
We've tried. The B, the sprouting of the hair in the face, palms, and bottoms of the feet. That's your choice?
What do you think, guys?
I can't answer right now. I'm brushing my heel.
Let's go for that.
You're going to go for that? No, it was actually spontaneous combustion.
No.
The logic was everybody knows alcohol burns, right? Mm. Oh. So if you drink a lot of it, you might as well. Mm. Okay, this is very exciting. You're one right with one to go. If you get this correct, you win. So here's your last question. Here we go. As you can imagine, it was hard to enforce prohibition when most people were against it. For example, when a bootlegger was put on trial in Los Angeles once, what happened? A, the jury acquitted him, and then while in court asked if they could come to his house to celebrate. B, a mistrial was declared when the judge showed up drunk. Or C, the bootlegger had to be acquitted when it was revealed that the jury had drunk the evidence.
I think number one sounds good.
They acquitted him and then said, can we come to your house to party? Although party was
maybe,
not...
Maybe number three.
Maybe number three. You changed your mind. So three,
yeah,
you're going to go with
number three.
He was acquitted when the jury drank the evidence.
Number three.
You're right. Very good. Yeah. And not only are you right...
Susie gets Carl's voice. I'm envious.
So, Carl, how did Kim Cattrall do in our show?
Very well, Peter. Kim, you had two correct answers, so you do win for Susie Riding. Congratulations.
Wow. Well done.
Thank you.
Is there nothing you can't do? Well done. Kim Cattrall is a star of stage and screen. Be sure to see her in the masterpiece presentation of My Boy Jack on PBS stations Sunday, April 20th. She returns as Samantha Jones in Sex and the City, the movie, which opens everywhere next month. Kim Cattrall, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kim.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
In just a minute, Polly wants a censor. It's a blue listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air.
This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Tom Baudette. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, the news in an AABBA rhyme scheme. If you'd like to play the Listener Limerick Challenge, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, the Government Accountability Office released a report this week that revealed improper spending by federal employees using government credit cards. They spent millions on iPods, internet dating services, expensive meals. One thing in particular caught our eye: a State Department employee taking part in drug enforcement training in the jungles of Ecuador, who spent hundreds of dollars on what?
Is this the lingerie?
This was the lingerie.
Yes. All right.
Figured you know that. Among the people who spent more than $2 million of taxpayer money on questionable purchases was an unidentified State Department trainer in South America. He or she needed special underwear for jungle training. I might have had a point, you know. The jungle environment being tough on intimates. But we'd have an easier time believing it was all about utility if the purchases had not been made at a place called Seduction Boutique. What, Mowgli's Secret was closed? Lawmakers protested this waste of money, though we think they were just professionally insulted by how penny-ante it was. $2 million, that's it? You can find $2 million in between the cushions and the sofas over at Halliburton. Roxanne, recently we reported on this show that scientists have proved that ugly men make better husbands for pretty women because they don't have as much incentive to cheat. And yet another breakthrough, who could have imagined it, study psychologists at Indiana University have determined that when it comes to women, men have a difficult time doing what?
Oh, somehow this escaped me.
You have to narrow it down to one.
Talking to them.
Almost, not quite.
Asking them out.
I think you're really attracted to me. I'm giving an example.
No, I understand that. I understand that.
I mean, I do think that, but I wouldn't mention that in the radio. Just
Didn't you feel like we should leave there for just a second? Boy, was all that right. A moment.
All right, wait. You mean correctly reading their clues?
Yes. It turns out, big surprise, everybody, if you're not sitting down, please do pull over if you're driving. Men have trouble understanding women. Scientifically proved.
There was a study?
There was a study. Turns out that it's been scientifically proven men are dense. Now, you might think that this study, which asked groups of male and female undergraduates to interpret the meaning of pictures of people making facial expressions and talking, would find that men often interpreted friendly gestures from women as sexual come-ons. And you would be right. That happened a lot. But more surprisingly, men also often missed real sexual come-ons, thinking women were just being friendly. The lesson for women out of this study: men are, in fact, dumber than a sack of hammers. And you'd actually be better off with the hammers because they would at least be occasionally useful around the house.
Yeah. Well, wait. Yeah. I want to see if I have this straight. If you're not coming on to them, they think that you are.
Right.
If you are coming on to them, they don't necessarily recognize it.
Right.
So what on earth are what's that girl supposed
to do? It's amazing anybody ever gets born.
No,
basically.
I think the whole thing should be done in writing. As the only man on this week's panel, I think I can speak for mankind in general.
Right.
But when women aren't interested, they're actually friendlier than when they are.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Let me ask you this, Tom. As a man, how would you know?
I wouldn't. I mean, I don't.
Don't. Paula, the Absolut Vodka Company had to apologize repeatedly this week for an ad campaign that depicted the southwestern United States as what?
I don't know. Stupid?
No. Not knowing if we're coming on to it or not? No.
A little dense?
I'll give you a hint. Lou Dobbs will be forced to switch to Smirnoff for his nightly fuzzy navel now.
Okay, so Lou Dobbs wouldn't like it. A sieve for immigration?
Close, sort of.
Totally Hispanic?
Even worse.
Germans? Probably slipped through the legs of the Border Patrol.
The ad depicted the Southwest United States as it once was. That's what made them mad.
How was it?
It was hot, but that's not the point. The point was the Southwest United States, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, areas around there were all once what?
Uninhabitable.
Hola.
It was all Mexican?
Yes, it was all part of Mexico, you see.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
You didn't know that. Absolute's newest print ad campaign in Mexico showed a map that showed the country's borders back as they were in the early 19th century, encompassing most of the American Southwest, with the wistful slogan, "In an absolute world." The ads immediately caused more than a dozen conservative groups to announce a boycott of Absolut. They called the Swedish brand traitorous and plain damn dumb. But they were just mad because all these anti-immigration guys, they had panicked before they realized what it was a joke, and they had started to build a fence at the Missouri border.
Yeah. Well, now these the Olympic torch protesters in Mexico City are saying, free Arizona.
Exactly. You know? Absolut apologized profusely again and again. They said the ads weren't some insidious campaign against Anglo sovereignty, but were meant to recall, quote, a time which the population of Mexico might feel was more ideal, unquote. Anti-immigration activists were mollified for now, but they're now calling for an investigation into whether that Juan Valdez fellow has a green card. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago's Loop, or you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Andy Gerber from Denver, Colorado.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
Good.
How are things in Denver?
Well, it snowed today.
Hey, you can still ski, isn't it? Spring skiing?
Yes, I skied today, in fact.
Do you ski in a bikini like I've seen in those photographs?
It was too cold to ski today in a bikini.
Andy, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Here's your first limerick.
Our macaw is befouling the air, and his fellows he's warped past repair. He's helping the birds to learn four-letter words. He's teaching the parrots to
swear.
Right. Barney, the potty mouth macaw, has been in the news before for his filthy mouth when he cussed out a mayor, a vicar, and two police officers and was banished to the Warwickshire Wildlife Sanctuary in Britain. Well, Barney is causing more trouble this time for teaching all his favorite words to the two other parrots at the center. Owner Jeff Grucock says, quote, "It sounds like a builder's yard sometimes when we come in here with all the abuse flying about. They just sit there swearing at each other now with all kinds of foul language. It's unbelievable." Very good. Here is your next limerick.
Since flossers are not always handy, we kids will find this answer dandy. To the sweet shop we're rushing to supplement brushing. Let's fight cavities with minty
candy.
Right. It's like fighting fire with fire, but more minty fresh. Scientists at Stony Brook University School of Dental Medicine have come up with a cavity-fighting candy. It's called Basic Mints. It mimics a compound in saliva that neutralizes acids. Children who ate the mints after brushing had 60% fewer cavities than children who did not. The researchers have already licensed the mints. They hope to get them on the market in the U.S. soon. In the meantime, though, they're hard at work developing their new product, a weight loss medication disguised as a deep-fried chocolate Twinkie. Yum. Here is your last limerick.
Solar paneling yearns to be free, 'cause alternative power's the key. But heat can't be made when it stays in the shade, so our neighbors must chop down their
tree.
Right. Good news, Californians. A judge in Sunnyvale is finally cracking down on those troublemaking lawbreakers among you, known by their gang name, the Redwood Trees. In a strange collision of environmental priorities, a resident there named Mark Vargas installed some solar panels on his roof, but found they were partially shaded by some mature redwoods on his neighbor's property. It turns out that in California, under something called the Solar Shade Act, it is illegal to become between solar panels and the sun. So he sued. 7 years of court battles later, a judge found the trees to be unrepentantly shady characters and ordered them trimmed back.
No.
Mr. Vargas expressed satisfaction that his quest to save the natural world will no longer be hindered by the natural world. Carl, how did Andy do?
Andy had 3 correct answers, Peter, so Andy, you win our prize.
Well done, Andy.
I'm thrilled.
Thanks so much for playing, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roxanne Roberts and Tom Beaudet each has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right. Paula, you are in third place, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Because of FAA inspections, blank airlines canceled thousands of flights this week.
American!
Yes, President Bush announced Thursday that he was cutting soldiers' blanks from 15 months to 12 months.
Their tour duty.
Right. More than 400 women and children were removed when the Texas compound of a blank sect was raided.
Polygamist.
Right. CBS denied a report that blank may leave the CBS Evening News before her contract expires.
Katie Couric.
Right. The streets of Orlando, Florida were not a safe place last week after a blank escaped from its home and ran amok.
One of the 7 dwarfs.
No, a diaper-wearing monkey. NBC sued the producers of the reality show Blank after they announced it was moving to Lifetime.
The reality show This Old House.
Project Runway.
Yeah, that's what
it
is.
In an amazing comeback, Kansas beat Memphis to win this year's men's blank.
NCAAs?
Yes, NCAA championship. Because it's been ruled unsuitable for children, the cartoon The Simpsons has been replaced on Venezuelan television by blank.
Baywatch Hawaii.
Yes! You are good. When Hugo Chavez realized the tiny, impressionable tots of his nation of Venezuela were being corrupted by watching The Simpsons, he had to put a stop to it. So it was out with The Simpsons, a show that the government says, quote, pushed messages that go against the whole education of boys, girls, and adolescents, unquote, and in with the wholesome educational series Baywatch. Because watching Pamela Anderson run in slow motion down a beach in a tight one-piece teaches both posture and basic fluid dynamics.
Not to mention anatomy.
Yeah.
Physics.
Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Paula has the lead.
We have flipped a coin. Tom is elected to go next. So, fill in the blank. On Thursday, the Senate passed a bipartisan bill to provide relief to blank owners.
Homeowners.
Right. Mark Penn resigned his post as top strategist for blank's presidential campaign.
Senator Clinton.
Right. A farewell meeting at a Black Sea resort failed to bring President Bush and blank together on the U.S. missile defense plan.
President Putin.
Right. After listening to 6 months of testimony, jurors in Britain have ruled that the driver and paparazzi were to blame for blank's death.
Princess Diana.
Right. A Purdue University contest in which engineering students are asked to perform a basic task with the most number of steps was won by the makers of a blank.
A crepe-making robot.
No, a 156-step hamburger-making machine.
Oh, I was so close.
You were. Pat Riley, Patrick Ewing, and Hakeem Olajuwon were among those selected for induction into the blank.
NBA Hall of Fame.
Right. This week, the Washington Post won 6 blanks, the largest number in the paper's history.
Pulitzers.
In fact, indeed, an 8-year-old boy in Colorado was suspended for 3 days for blanking in school.
I don't know. I'm reading in
no,
school.
No, he was suspended for sniffing a magic marker.
Oh.
Wow.
Ethan Harris used one of those Sharpies, permanent
whatever
markers.
Happened to just eating glue?
Well, you know.
He didn't eat glue, he ate paste.
Paste, right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Now you tell him. He wasn't able to say a word for the entire 4th grade. No, Ethan Harris used a Sharpie to color a place in his sleeve, and he was caught, you know, just enjoying the aroma. He liked the way it smelled. So to send a clear message about substance abuse, the school immediately suspended him for 3 days and purged the school of all markers. Explained Principal Chris Benish, quote, principals make hundreds of decisions every day based on our best judgment. And in that time, smelling that marker, I felt like, wow, that's a very serious marker. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
So Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. So, and knowing she plays to win, how many does Roxanne need to do it?
6 to tie, but 7 to win outright.
I'm hampered, though.
You're hampered?
I want you to know, I play to win. I just don't.
All right, Roxanne, this is for the game.
Okay.
Fill in the blank. Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton are among those urging President Bush to boycott the opening ceremonies of the blank.
Of the Beijing Olympics.
Right. Officials reported that Abu Ubaida al-Masri, a leader in blank suspected in the London train bombings, died in Pakistan this week.
In Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. Yeah. The opposition said it would not participate in a runoff election against Robert Mugabe in blank.
Zimbabwe.
Right. Still resisting a takeover bid, Yahoo said this week that blank would need to increase its offer.
Microsoft.
Right. After receiving complaints, the D.C. Transit Agency removed ads featuring blank taking the D.C. subway system.
A bobblehead pope.
A bobblehead of Pope Benedict.
Yes.
Yes. A new poll finds that more Americans plan to use this year's blank rebate to pay bills.
Blank rebate. The tax rebate.
Right. Yes. Yes. Although she has not officially confirmed marrying rapper Jay-Z, blank flashed a wedding ring at reporters this week.
Beyonce.
Right. The winner in a worst bad names contest was a woman named blank.
I'd like to know the right answer.
Yeah. No, her name is Iona Nipple. Spelled K-N-I-P-L. The judges, who are the authors of the book Bad Baby Names, picked Ms. Nipple as the winner because of the inevitable reply people
gave her. Does she live in a cold climate?
She does.
Okay.
No, she means she'd say her name. She'd say, "Hi, I'm Iona Nipple," and people would say, "I own two." Ms. Nipple briefly gave up her unusual maiden name when she married and took her husband's name, but after her divorce, she went back to her maiden name because, as she said, for some reason, Iona Johnson just didn't feel right. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
Roxanne had 7 correct answers, so with 14 more points, she now has 17 points, and
wow,
Roxanne is this week's champion.
That's amazing, Roxanne. Well done. Your paper won 6 Pulitzers this week, but I bet Gene Weingarten is jealous of this, is all I'm going to say. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will be the next public relations disaster for the Beijing Olympics. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse, and the Wallace Foundation, whose Knowledge Center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org. Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, the torch relay has been a bust. What's the next PR disaster for the Olympics? Paula Poundstone.
The Tibetan synchronized swimming team kicks their butts.
It's that high altitude training. Roxanne Roberts.
300 million Olympic fortune cookies have been pre-printed with the unfortunate slogan, Beijing 08, mission accomplished.
And Tom Baudet.
Tibetan teenage mutant ninja turtles begin emerging from the polluted Beijing sewer system.
Well, if any of those things happen to the Olympics panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Roxanne Roberts. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.